Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Northeast Pennsylvania is poised for a $25 billion energy boom tied to artificial intelligence. But questions remain about environmental impact and local jobs. The River Reporter's Liam Mayo is here to break it all down. A giant elephant in the heart of Jeffersonville? We'll discover the story behind Mama and the message she's sharing with the community. Theater meets farmland. Farm Arts Collective's Paradise Lost scavenger hunt transforms their 25-acre farm into the Garden of Eden. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi has a preview. And Riverfest is back and celebrating 35 years of art, music, and community fun this Sunday. We'll hear more about what makes this event a can't-miss summer tradition. That's coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. A federal judge is weighing the case between the Trump administration and its effort to cut billions of dollars in federal grants from Harvard University. Both sides appeared in a federal courtroom yesterday in Boston. Harvard says the Trump administration is violating free speech rights by demanding control over the university's viewpoint diversity policies. NPR's Alyssa Nadworny says the Trump administration appears to have changed its focus in its legal argument.
In court filings, the administration said these grants were canceled because Harvard violated civil rights law by allegedly fostering anti-Semitism on campus. But in court on Monday, the lone lawyer representing the Trump administration, Michael Velchik, seemed to pivot, arguing that the administration has the right to cancel government grants at any time if it decides that an institution doesn't align with its priorities. He essentially framed the issue as one about finances and told the judge that the government has the ability to simply give the research funding to another institution.
NPR's Alyssa Nadworny reporting. It's not clear when the judge will issue her decision. Cases of COVID-19 appear to be surging in the United States. NPR's Rob Stein reports that's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
COVID has surged every winter and summer since the pandemic began, and this summer looks no different. The amount of virus showing up in wastewater and the number of people testing positive and showing up in emergency rooms to get treated for COVID have been increasing now for weeks in some bellwether parts of the country, like the South and the West. It's impossible to know how big this summer's wave will be or how long it will last. But many people are susceptible to the virus because it's been so long since they got vaccinated the last time, and last winter's surge was so mild. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Stocks on Wall Street open mixed today as more big companies reveal how they're dealing with President Trump's tariffs. As NPR's Maria Aspen reports, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up more than 50 points.
General Motors is feeling tariffs bite into its business. Profits fell at the automaker, which imports roughly half of the Chevys, Buicks, and other cars it sells in the United States. CEO Mary Barra says GM is working to greatly reduce our tariff exposure, but it still has work to do. The company said it felt more than $1 billion of impact from the new import taxes. That echoes rival car company Stellantis, which also saw tariffs eat into its recent earnings. Meanwhile, Coca-Cola reported better-than-expected results and says it will launch a new product made with U.S. cane sugar this fall. President Trump said last week the company had agreed to do so at his request. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up about 40 points. The Nasdaq is down more than 200. You're listening to NPR News. A Justice Department official says he wants to interview the former girlfriend of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Ghislaine Maxwell was convicted and imprisoned for helping Epstein sexually abuse girls. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanch says he anticipates meeting Maxwell shortly. There's been backlash from President Trump's supporters after the Justice Department did not release additional records from the Epstein investigation. The Trump administration says it's going to withdraw from the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Agency. This is the second time President Trump has pulled the U.S. out of UNESCO. People on Medicaid will have to prove they're eligible for benefits under the tax cut and spending bill recently approved by Congress. Catherine Houghton with KFF Health News reports on one man who says he's reluctantly breaking the rules.
James works in Missoula, Montana, doing food prep. After a recent raise, he now makes more than the limit to qualify for Medicaid by about $50 a week.
I don't want to be a fraud, but I've been given no other choice.
We're using James, his middle name, because he fears he'll get kicked off of Medicaid and lose the coverage that pays for his medicine. James did not report his increased income. His problem, getting just successful enough to risk losing coverage, is pretty common. It's called a benefit cliff. Some researchers say they'd like to see policymakers consider guaranteeing Medicaid coverage for at least a year.
That's Catherine Houghton with KFF Health News. And I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, celebrating the hard work, commitment, and achievements of the 1 in 5 college students who are parents. More at imaginablefutures.com. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Billions of dollars are heading to Pennsylvania as the state positions itself to become a national hub for artificial intelligence development. At the heart of the plan are massive new data centers and the natural gas power plants needed to keep them running. In Northeast Pennsylvania alone, utility giant PPL and investment firm Blackstone are planning $25 billion worth of energy and infrastructure projects, fueling both hopes for economic growth and concerns about environmental impacts. With many details still unclear, including exactly where new power stations might be built, questions are growing about what this AI-powered future could mean for local communities. Joining us now with more on this story is Liam Mayo, reporter with The River Reporter, who's been following the developments. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Can you explain in simple terms, what exactly are PPL and Blackstone planning to build in Northeast Pennsylvania?
Yeah, what PPL and Blackstone are planning to build are natural gas-powered power stations, taking the natural gas that is pulled out of the ground through fracking and turning that into electricity to power data centers. They want to tie these new power stations specifically to sort of specific data centers, as I understand it, through energy service agreements. So these new power stations aren't just feeding stuff willy-nilly into the grid. They're being targeted at the new data centers that are cropping up. And the companies say they are doing this because of all of the data center projects that have already been cropping up and announced. There was a press release between PPL and Blackstone. PPL, as you mentioned, the utility giant, Blackstone, the investment firm that's putting up the money or putting up a chunk of the money. According to the two companies, PPL estimates that 60 gigawatts of potential data center projects are being developed within its territory, with 13 gigawatts in advanced planning stages, and that if all of those, even just the projects that are in the advanced planning stages, come online, PPL estimates a 6 gigawatt shortfall in their service territory in the next 5 or 6 years. So there is an immediate electricity shortfall that PPL is looking at from all the data centers that are proposed to be built in northeastern Pennsylvania, that it is hoping to address with the creation of these new gas-fired power stations.
So I want to dig into that a little bit more and why Northeast Pennsylvania is being targeted for these AI data centers. But I just want to explain to folks who may not understand the connection between AI and energy. Can you explain a little bit about why these AI data centers need so much power and the relationship between natural gas and artificial intelligence?
Absolutely. So when you ask an AI system a question like ChatGPT or Google Gemini, it takes an immense amount of both data processing power and then in turn, like actual real electricity power for the AI to come up with the answer to that question. I don't have the specific figures in front of me right now, but it's, I believe, orders of magnitude more than just like a regular non-AI Google search would be. So as AI is becoming more and more ubiquitous, and as companies are looking at expanding the use of AI more and more, they're needing to build entirely new data centers to house all of the computers, to do all of that back-end work, to come up with the answers when an AI system is asked the question. So they're looking to do that. And as they're looking to do that, they're not just needing sort of the land to build these power centers on. They need a steady, reliable source of energy to power these data centers, because those are incredibly energy intensive. And that's kind of where fracking comes in. And that's where Pennsylvania comes in, because Pennsylvania is, because of the natural gas underneath its soil, a hugely energy producing state. There was a quote from Senator McCormick, who was one of the participants in the Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit, where a lot of this got announced, where he called Pennsylvania the nation's second largest energy producer. Quote, Pennsylvania is uniquely positioned to deliver the abundant, affordable energy that growing AI and advanced manufacturing sectors demand. So because Pennsylvania has all of these natural gas resources, and because Pennsylvania has kind of this widespread fracking availability and technology that it can use, it is being seen as the perfect place to locate data centers, and to, so that those data centers have easy access to the energy needed to keep them running.
And more specifically, Northeast Pennsylvania being targeted for these AI data centers and natural gas power plants. Is that what makes the region attractive because of the fracking that's gone on in the area?
Yeah, it's the same sort of deal, where Northeast Pennsylvania has access to a lot of the same things that the rest of Pennsylvania does. And it's something that the current representative for Northeastern Pennsylvania, Rob Bresnahan, has really been pushing. He's been pushing fracking as a economic boon for the area. In his response, or his statement on this new PPL and Blackstone investment, he said, quote, "This confirms that leaders across the country know what I have known my whole life. Northeastern Pennsylvania has the potential for greatness. Our region is full of untapped power and is more than ready for new growth, investments, and opportunities." So he sees this as a huge boon for the area. And he convened this roundtable back in March to talk about the boon that it had for the area, and assembled this panel of people from around Northeastern Pennsylvania to talk about the economic benefits of fracking and the economic benefits that fracking, and in coordination with this AI data center development, could bring to the area. So it's something where people locally are really seeing the opportunity to capitalize on these national trends and bring them to this area.
Yeah, you reported on that, and we talked to you about that, promoting fracking in the area, specifically in the upper Delaware. But given the fracking ban in the Delaware River Basin, how likely is it that power plants could be built in places like Wayne or Pike counties? Are those areas still at risk for new gas infrastructure that's being proposed here?
Right now, it doesn't seem likely that Wayne and Pike specifically could see this development. As you mentioned, there is this there's a moratorium on fracking in place throughout the entire upper Delaware River Valley, from the Delaware River Basin Commission. And that's something that sort of Bresnahan convened that roundtable to rail against and try and push back on. But for right now, it seems pretty solid. And because data centers are tied to this fracking infrastructure, it seems likelier that the development would exist sort of in areas of northeastern Pennsylvania that are not Wayne and Pike counties, because in other areas, those data centers could very immediately tap into the fracking and natural gas infrastructure that exists and can be built there. But sort of that fact, and the fact that all of this, these billions of dollars of development, are coming to Pennsylvania for AI development and for fracking development, that has people concerned about the fate of this fracking ban in Wayne and Pike counties. Or it has, well, it depends on which side of the fence you sit on. It has environmentalists concerned, and it has the sort of business people and governmental people who could stand to benefit from it very excited about that. The Delaware River Basin Commission is an independent agency. It's not under the direct control of the federal government, but already sort of there have been a couple of pushes to try and influence the DRBC. Bresnahan introduced a resolution in Congress to have the federal government audit the DRBC and a couple of other interstate commissions for ethics things. It was fairly general, but I think you can assume that it is tied to this desire to get the DRBC to step back from its fracking ban. There was also a recent meeting of the DRBC where the DRBC itself chose to accept a resolution put forward by its federal representative, basically committing it not to use any of the federal funding it receives for climate change or DEI initiatives, both things that the federal government is trying to push back on or do away with, and climate change in particular being something that the DRBC is intimately concerned with. Its status or its role is to protect the environment of the Delaware River, and climate change is one of the major threats to that river. So the idea that it is tying its hands a little bit from engaging in quote-unquote climate change investigations has concerned environmentalists, and they've sort of started this petition or this pledge to fight back against fracking in the area and against these attempts to undermine the DRBC's stance on fracking. So right now, that ban on fracking in Wayne and Pike County still holds, and it would prohibit a lot of this development from coming all the way into Wayne and Pike counties. It would likely happen elsewhere in northeastern Pennsylvania. But looking forward into the future, based on the tenor of the federal government, it is possible that that ban could be under threat. Mm.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Liam Mayo of the River Reporter about a $25 billion proposed energy boom tied to artificial intelligence in northeast Pennsylvania. And we're talking about some of the questions that remain about environmental impact and local jobs. And given the fact that this amount of money is so huge, are there people on both sides of the aisle here, Republicans and Democrats, looking for this investment in their area? Is there sort of a bipartisan agreement here, or what does that look like?
In Pennsylvania, it does look a little bit like a bipartisan agreement. Over in New York, there's this kind of statewide acknowledgement from the, you know, Democratic side, which is the side that is in control of the state government, that fracking poses risks to human health. Mm-hmm. And I believe it is banned in New York State because of that. In Pennsylvania, most of the state is open to fracking, and the state government is much purpler. The state government is split between Republican control of the Senate, I believe, and Democratic control of the governor's office, and I think the House as well. So Pennsylvania Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro did appear at the July 15 Pennsylvania Energy and Information Summit, or Energy and Innovation Summit, where a lot of this investment was announced, where $90 billion of investment across Pennsylvania was announced. And he has talked separately about his role in sort of opening the state up to, you know, energy development of all kinds, including fracking development, and to AI development. So Shapiro is positioning the state as being ready to accept a lot of these investment opportunities, despite sort of being a Democratic governor, where a lot of the push from this is coming more from the Republican side.
And you mentioned, you know, the fracking ban and the tenor of the government currently, the current administration, and some of the local representatives, you know, promoting fracking in the area. We know about the environmental risks of fracking, and those are similar to the proposed power stations, especially in local air and water quality, right? Because it's all kind of tied together.
Absolutely, and I think the idea is that these power stations would themselves necessitate a lot more fracking, or would necessitate increased fracking to power them. So not only would building more power stations have those sort of immediate environmental risks you're talking about, they would also create basically the demand for new fracking development, or would create the demand for consistent fracking development at a time when, for the general good of the climate, environmentalists are arguing we need to step back from fossil fuels sort of more broadly.
And we're hearing these promises of economic growth and job creation. What kinds of jobs would be likely to come with projects like these? Are they temporary construction jobs or longer-term local employment?
It's a little bit of both. There are a lot of construction jobs available. There were also permanent jobs being talked about. The Blackstone PPL, in like $25 billion investment specifically, according to McCormick, is expected to create 6,000 construction jobs along with 3,000 new permanent jobs. There's also a separate project that PPL is looking at that is expected to create 3,400 new jobs in Pennsylvania, according to McCormick. So it's both these like temporary construction jobs while this stuff is getting built up, and in theory, the permanent jobs for the people who would be running these facilities.
And in your reporting, what do you think are the biggest unanswered questions right now about this massive investment in AI and energy infrastructure?
I think there are a lot of unanswered questions. I think a question I'm intimately interested in is where exactly these new power stations will be built. We asked PPL and Blackstone if they had any more information to share about the locations. They said that they don't have any information at this time.
So nothing's been proposed yet or any sites confirmed?
No, they said they were looking at a couple of different sites, but they didn't have sort of specific ones to announce at this time. So I think that's an unanswered question. I think the exact nature of the economic boom that could come is unknown. It's, you know, it's all very well and good to put specific numbers of expected jobs in a press release you put out announcing a specific project, but whether those jobs will actually come through, what kinds of employment that will be, all those things are still more nebulous. And then whether these projects will be done in a way that, you know, just the normal questions that come with any kind of large-scale development, which is, will these projects get overseen at the local level through development processes in such a way that they don't harm their surrounding communities?
Have PPL or Blackstone made any commitments to clean energy, or are these plans focused entirely on fossil fuel infrastructure?
Right now, these plans are sort of focused entirely around fossil fuel infrastructure, or the plans to power data centers are focused primarily on fossil fuel infrastructure. I don't have specific like data in front of me to pull from, but I've heard that natural gas or sort of fossil fuels is viewed as the preferred way of powering these data centers because they need sort of an incredibly reliable source of energy, which the people pushing these don't see solar or wind as. I believe nuclear actually is one of the other things that is being considered, not for the like Northeast Pennsylvania PPL development. That's primarily, that's entirely natural gas. But just looking over the sort of other investments that were announced, there's a $3 billion deal with Google elsewhere in the state to repower two hydropower facilities. There's a $2.4 billion investment to upgrade the Limerick nuclear power plant. So there are a couple of other sources of energy talked about for this, but it's primarily fracking. It's sort of some hydropower, some nuclear power. I don't believe there's very much discussion of like wind or solar power to power these things.
And before we go, given the players here and the amount of money that's being proposed to invest, does this feel like the beginning of a long-term transformation of Northeast Pennsylvania's economy and energy infrastructure?
I mean, I think that's one of the other questions, right? Mm-hmm. The current trend absolutely is from the federal government, drill baby drill, from industry, we're 100% hard in on AI development. And I think a lot of those trends will be sticky. I think, you know, once you have a fracking power plant up and running, the likelihood is that development will stay up and running. But just another one administration ago, we had another administration that was focused entirely on renewables and was putting huge things into place for renewables. So I think it's possible that this could entirely change the energy landscape of northeastern Pennsylvania, but it's also possible that it could change it but not sort of reinvigorate it or completely reshape it. So I think that is just something we'll have to watch in the years ahead.
That's Liam Mayo of the River Reporter. You can read his reporting on this in billions of dollars proposed for Pennsylvania and Northeast Pennsylvania for natural gas and data center development related to artificial intelligence in the River Reporter at riverreporter.com. Liam, great reporting. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, why is there an elephant in the middle of Jeffersonville? We'll find out more after this. It's Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Ira Flatow from Science Friday. Public media organizations just lost federal funding, and it is a big deal. This cut will have serious long-term consequences for the service we provide to you unless we replace that funding with support from more listeners. The future of public media is in your hands, so please go to the station's website to start or increase your monthly sustaining donation today. And thanks.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
On the next Radio Lab.
These are like swimming fossils.
Could one of the oldest and scariest species on our planet.
Sharks are crazy. Yeah.
Help cure some of our worst diseases.
It blows your mind. It really does.
These animals that we don't even want to share the water with because we're afraid that they'll harm us could actually save us.
Wait, what?
It's amazing, actually.
That's on the next Radio Lab. Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This summer, a new resident is turning heads on Main Street in Jeffersonville, a life-sized elephant named Mama. Installed in the garden outside the Jeffersonville Bake Shop, Mama isn't just an eye-catching sculpture. She's carrying a message about environmental awareness and the relationship between humans and nature. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett caught up with Michael Huber, co-owner of the Jeffersonville Bake Shop and its parent company, Heartwood, to learn why Mama's message matters to the community. Genevieve also visited the Sunday Market in Jeffersonville to hear what locals think of their newest neighbor.
If you've walked down Main Street in Jeffersonville this summer, you may have noticed a pretty big addition to the natural garden right by the Jeffersonville Bake Shop. Mama the Elephant, as she has been affectionately named by bake shop owners and husband and wife business team Michael Huber and Lauren Cycli, is a life-sized elephant replica structure that was created as part of the Great Elephant Migration.
So the Great Elephant Migration is a combination art exhibit, fundraiser, consciousness awareness project that had as one of its stops the Meatpacking District in New York City. We saw the full-on exhibition, which I think was over 100 elephants, really all throughout our neighborhood. They put earth down and plants and had the whole herd there with the patriarchs, the matriarchs, adolescent elephants, the babies. It was really amazing. And we learned about it and thought we wanted to support it by buying one of the elephants at the end.
That was Michael Huber. He told me as soon as he saw the elephant structures and learned more about the initiative's mission of using art to build awareness about human and animal coexistence, he knew she would be a great fit for Jeffersonville and Sullivan County.
It's sitting in the garden that we created. It's a really, really nice garden. Landscape design was designed to be very natural. It was designed by actually Lauren's sister, who's a landscape architect for a firm called Terremoto. And it's maintained by Adrienne, the Dirt Diva, and her team, who are wonderful. And I think it's really a great example of a garden that can be environmentally friendly, native plants. It's all native plants. It's all maintained in a very environmentally friendly way. And it's a gorgeous garden. We created some benches, Chris Scullion carved out of whole tree trunks. And I don't know if you've been there, but it's worth, you know, it's worth checking out. And we love it when people are there, and we just hope people enjoy it.
As part of the Great Elephant Migration, MAMA was first constructed by a community of over 200 indigenous artists in the Nilgiri Hills of Tamil Nadu in southern India. Elephants and humans coexist in this region, but their forests have become overrun with lantana, a bamboo-like flowering weed that destroys the natural vegetation the elephants rely on to eat. As a response, these artists took the lantana and sculpted it into art.
When you read about the artists and the artisans who make these elephants, they're really, I think, focused on a much deeper relationship with nature. And climate change is obviously an element of that, but I think they look at the world and they look at their interactions with nature differently than we do. They look at nature as a on a more spiritual level as part of a whole that humans are also a part of. And when they see this sort of invasive species, it's bringing things out of balance. And it has ramifications, you said, for elephants, but also for their waterways. And Sullivan County also has invasive species, particularly along the waterways. It's something that we all can relate to. And I think it helps from our standpoint, it increased our awareness of these issues. And to the extent that that helps other people become aware of those issues, it's great.
From the Nilgiri Hills to New York City and now to Jeffersonville, MAMA has made quite the journey, amazing viewers and spreading awareness about coexistence and indigenous art along the way. And community members at the weekly Jeffersonville Sunday Farmers Market have been delighted by her presence.
Can you tell me about the first time you saw the elephant? Did you know what it was about? You know, what do you think of it now?
Well, I knew what it was about from social media before I saw it. I saw it during a farmer's market, and it drew an enormous crowd. I thought people were coming down the street to come to the market, but they were all going to the elephant, and then they joined us at the market later.
That was Melissa Kavetsky, manager of Jeffersonville's Sunday Market. She told me about how MAMA being there was already making people more aware of invasive species in Sullivan County's aquatic ecosystem.
This was part of a global conservation project, and to have a representation of that in Jeffersonville is really cool. And to have people talking about invasive species is another really incredible thing for our town. People are stopping to look at a beautiful elephant, and, you know, then it ends up turning into a much broader conversation about the environment.
Walking by MAMA for the first time, Susan and Steve of White Lake were fascinated to learn more about her and her story.
I actually think that it's very beautiful. I noticed right away that it was made out of bamboo, and I found it interesting, but now knowing its history makes it even more interesting.
As she painted MAMA and the Jeffersonville Bake Shop garden that is filled with native plants to the Catskills, local artist Sharon Malloy talked about how the Great Elephant Migration inspired her to think about art and nature more globally.
I guess it really is kind of like spreading awareness to people about, you know, we get so kind of in our own little villages and our little towns. obviously we don't think about elephants very much while we're living up in here in the Catskills. So it gives us, having that there is kind of, you know, gets us to think about animals, plants in other places, and what we're kind of all kind of, you know, how to help them, how to support them, and just knowing about them.
Nearly a decade after they bought the abandoned building that is now the Jeffersonville Bake Shop, along with several other stores on Main Street in Jeffersonville, Huber and Cycli are proud of the local business initiatives they have helped to grow in this small town. And as Huber sees it, Mama's placement in the natural garden for the rest of the summer is just one more step towards a larger goal of improving local communities from the ground up.
We have thought about creating a garden that's accessible for the community. It was important to us when we bought that property to make it more than just a commercial space. We really wanted it to be the heart of Jeffersonville and the community and have it open to everyone. And I think bringing in things like Mama to enhance the community, bringing in a garden, just trying to make the space more livable for everyone has been the goal. And I think we've been joined by a number of other people and preceded for that matter. There are other people doing this in addition to us. And to Lauren and to me, having art in the town is a really important aspect of having a healthy community.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Genevieve. And we'll take a break. And when we come back, it's back. Riverfest is back for its 35th year in Narrowsburg. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we're going to hear the exotic percussion of Martin Denny, plus one of the great bongo records, Jazz Heat Bongo Beat. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Why not join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred? The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And it's that time of year again. Riverfest is back in Narrowsburg this Sunday. Art, music, crafts, the dog parade, plus a brand new bird-themed parade to check out this time around. Joining us now, Ariel Schamberg of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance to give us the scoop on all that's happening for Riverfest's 35th year. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Tim, and happy Riverfest week.
Happy Riverfest week to everybody. Congratulations, 35 years. Wow. I mean, it's really evolved and changed a little bit. Can you kind of reflect on the 35 years of this great community event?
No, I've only been around for 8 of them.
Give me the last 8 then.
Fair enough. You know, Riverfest is a treasured and beloved event in Narrowsburg that takes place every year on Main Street. We are overlooking the narrowest part of the Delaware, the deepest part of the Delaware, and it's a chance for our community to get together to welcome the thousands of people who come every year. To discover great artisans, learn more about the incredible ecology in our area, hear live music on the main stage, create special crafts, and of course, bring your dog or your canine identifying pet to be part of River Dogs on Parade.
That is a great tradition. And again, you know, you have these great traditions like River Dogs on Parade, all of the art, all of the celebration of ecology, music. How do you decide to, and when do you decide to sort of tweak it a little bit like this year? You're adding the birds.
Avian Amble.
I know, I want to get their name right. Avian Amble.
Because Main Street's just too short for a parade, but just right for an amble. You know, I think at least for the years that I've had the honor of being part of DVAA, the staff and I and the board, we're always looking to bring the community more and more into the event. I think COVID, you know, really taught us a great lesson, just in terms of how much the community actually cherished this. It's a chore putting on a street festival. Mm-hmm. I'm sure many in our community and your listeners, who do some of the great, long festivals in the area. I was just at the Wurtsboro Board of Trade Festival for Founders Day there. And, the day before our festivals, the Calicoon,
Country Fair. And so, there's Borscht Belt Fest also in
Allenville and the world's greatest small fair in Grahamsville. Yeah. we're very fortunate in Sullivan County to have so many great ones. I think the flavor of this one really does come out in the way that our community shows up and participates in it, and the way this is so maker and creative centered as a festival. And it really shows off Narrowsburg, a town that reflects that year round.
And one of the big things is also the poster auction with local artists featured. How many artists do you have this year, and how does that support the regional art community?
So we have over 50 artists this year. And, you know, that if I put on average, I've seen now probably, I want to say maybe 500 posters. And it blows my mind every year how people take that same 11 by 17 board and create something so unique and so special. They're going to be auctioned off at 1 p.m. And we'll have some guest community auctioneers, including Tommy Cambridge from Growing Old Together. And it's a great way to support not only DVAA's visual arts programs, which is where the majority of the proceeds go, but and this is another coming out of COVID experience. We wanted to make sure that the artists in our community who are so generous with their creativity were supported too. So the participating artists have the option of getting a percentage of the proceeds.
Mm, very nice. And then also live music and storytelling. What are some highlights there?
So some of your listeners may be familiar with Callison, who's going to be gracing the main stage at 11 a.m.
Host of Liberation Station, Saturdays at 7 here on Radio Catskill.
One of my favorite programs. And we're really thrilled to start the day with Callison and then close the day with AIM the Band, which is a mystical genre and gender blending artist with powerful vocals and many, many stories to tell. Their performance will be equal parts haunting and healing, with enchanting melodies and an alt rock beat. So a great way to close out the day.
And also, you brought in your 8-page insert in the River Reporter. I mean, it's 35th annual Riverfest, and it's grown to a point where you got 8 pages that you can fill in the River Reporter. Very cool insert there. And we're happy and proud to be a media sponsor this year. And I believe our own Jason Dole might have a role this year.
Is that true?
I think so.
I hope so. Otherwise, it's going to be me, and we'd much rather have Jason welcoming everybody on the main stage.
I think he's going to be the MC.
He is our MC, and we're, you know, again, just looking forward to having so many in the community be a part of it. Our friends at Tustin Social have collaborated with Yarn Slingers for the YA Slingers. We're going to be having young youth storytellers sharing their experiences of life on the river. As part of our River Stories event. And this is just another special way that Riverfest brings in the community. And for the young creatives, along with the storytellers, we're so thrilled to welcome back Adrian Holder Whiskey for our kids' crafting tent. Mm-hmm. She's created a number of environmentally focused arts activities that people will be able to do from 10 to 3 during the day. And the first part of the day, she'll actually be hosting costume project workshop for the Avian Amble. So anybody who's interested in being part of the Avian Amble, which will be led by the National Park Service's Hunky Eagle, which we can't wait to see in person. If he looks,
is that the eagle's name?
Hunky? We've just all noted that he's quite the handsome fella. And, you know, there'll be opportunities during the morning before the amble for folks to make their own bird costumes, or they can work on them at home and join us in advance of the amble. We've got some street circus performers. You might see some birds rolling down the street, as well as some puppetry. It's going to be a really exciting event. And I think that's the tradition of street theater that Riverfest has had for many years. We wanted to continue that.
I believe there was a gentleman that always showed up with a bird on his, or a hawk, I believe.
We're counting on it. Yeah.
So, yes, he's going to lead the parade, maybe. Okay, logistics. Where can folks get more information about the event on Sunday starting at 10?
Well, if you pick up a copy of this week's River Reporter, you will find our 8-page insert that's full of this event schedules, details about the timing of things, who's doing them, as well as some wonderful contributions from our friends at the National Park Service, a crossword puzzle, and fun facts about the ecology of the area from the Upper Delaware Council. You can also visit us online at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org/Riverfest.
And it's free, rain or shine.
Rain or shine.
Any tips on parking for folks? It's a Main Street's beautiful. It's a tight squeeze, though.
There will be no parking on Main Street because
right.
we've got over 60 vendors taking up the street. So the best place for parking is to go down to Fireman's Field, and we'll have a wonderful shuttle service that will bring people right up to the intersection of Bridge and Main. And you can stroll around town and then get a chauffeured ride right back to your car down at Fireman's Field.
Thought of everything.
After 35 years.
You better
get the parking right.
Get the parking right. Ariel Schamburg from the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance and Riverfest this Sunday at 10 until 4 in Narrowsburg, rain or shine. We will see you there. We'll be there as well.
Can't wait.
All right. Thank you. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Farm Arts and their new Dream on the Farm performance is coming up. We'll get more from culture reporter Valerie Manzi after a break. It's Radio Chatskill.
Congress has approved a White House request to eliminate federal funding for public media. NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and enriching everyday life. But without federal funding, we are relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Farm Arts Collective's annual site-specific production, Dream on the Farm, returns with a new immersive theatrical adventure, Paradise Lost Scavenger Hunt. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi sat down with director and Farm Arts Collective founder Tandis Kowalczyk and actor James Sullivan to learn how this unique blend of theater, farming, and environmental reflection challenges audiences to ask, what is your paradise? What have you lost? And how will you find it again?
Welcome, Adam and Eve.
Hello, hello.
I have Adam and Eve here at WJFF, also known as Jim Sullivan and Tanis Kowalczyk.
Hello.
And they are both part of an upcoming production by Farm Arts Collective entitled Paradise Lost, A Scavenger Hunt. So now there is a huge amount to unpack here. John Milton's Paradise Lost required a lot of unpacking. This is going to require even a bit more.
Exactly.
Because we know how Tanis's mind works.
So this is a performance that's the sixth performance in our decade-long series of climate change-themed plays. Dream on the Farm is the series. And this is this year's performance. We've been working on it since January. And really, the idea is, to put it in a nutshell, if I can try, Val, is that Adam and Eve in Paradise Lost lose paradise. They're expelled from paradise because they disobeyed their God. And they ate from the tree of knowledge. And my proposal is that contemporary humanity, that's you and I, here in the studio and beyond, we too have eaten from the tree of knowledge. We know so much now. We have all the technology. We have all the information about what's going on with the planet, what's causing the air and the moisture to increase and heat up in the atmosphere. It's because of CO2 emissions. And so, like, we know we have all this information, and yet it's so hard for us to try to change. And that we are all slowly losing our paradise. And that's my proposal. That's what I'm proposing as a kind of concept for this year's performance. And of course, in the style of Farm Arts Collective, we're telling it in a musical, elliptical, visual, oral, a great scenography. We're telling it in a lot of fun ways.
Well, what I found so interesting is that you incorporate no theater.
Right.
Japanese no theater. I'm saying, okay, where did that come from?
Right. So Jim and I are wearing kimonos in this performance, and he has a beautiful kimono, I have to say. You look very handsome in it.
I saw you on Facebook, Jim. You look quite fetching.
He does. And so the idea behind that, as a director, I wanted to take the most familiar story that we have, which is probably this story of God created the earth in 7 days, and then he made humans, and that he made humans in his image. And so, you know, it's a story we all know, and Eve ate the apple and convinced Adam to join her, and then they were banished. We got that story. It's in our, like, DNA almost, you know, it's as far as a story goes. And so what I wanted to do was tell this story to our audiences in an unfamiliar way, so that we could maybe look at it a little bit differently and be open to the experience when we go out for the scavenger hunt, to then see modern day world and the world that we are now in, and think about how we're losing our paradise. So that was just sort of an idea. It was like,
just sort of an idea. Okay. Jim, tell me about your experience in acting in this type of a collaborative production.
I worked with Tanis on, I believe it was the first Dream on the Farm, which was the Weather Project.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, that wasn't Dream on the Farm, but it was like definitely my first climate change play that I ever made. And you were a part of that, a big part of it.
So I find it so fascinating to watch Tanis work and how collaborative she is with her actors, and how she reaches out to us to ask us questions. And so she has a framework in which she hangs her show. And beyond that, everything is created, you know, from the music to the text to the choral pieces. And it's just fascinating to see that she's so open to working with suggestions from people. So there's a lot of questions that will come up during the creation of this. So this is not something that's prepackaged. This is not something that you go to dramatists to purchase and then you have your spin on it. This is, you know, from scratch. So I love the idea to begin with. And I also love that we don't have all the answers going into this. So as we, you know, so it's like, what's going to happen over here? It's like, well, I don't really know yet. We haven't quite gotten there. We have some ideas, but what do you think? And or something has to happen here with the music. I'm not sure what it is, you know, what and she'll open it up to the chorus and say, you know, what kind of sound do we need here? Do we need to layer in something over this dialogue? Or maybe we need to put some dance and dialogue together. So I find it fascinating that how she will assign a certain projects to someone. So, I mean, at one point I had come to Tanis and I said, I think that we need to hear a little bit from Adam and get his point of view. So she'll say, okay, that's great. Well, why don't we use this you create some lyrics and we'll use this melody that was made and go for it. So
you must be, Jim, supercharged creatively right now.
I am supercharged.
I can tell you have a glow.
Well, I was also at the beach a couple of days ago.
Okay. Holiday. We were all working and he was on holiday. No.
A couple of days at the beach. Yeah, that'll give you that glow too. But yes, okay. I am glowing.
Yes. Well, I know you have a passion for acting and theater.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So yes, it's wonderful that to see you out there and that we have people that provide the opportunity for it.
Yeah, and I think that Jim is doing really a great job as Adam. And also just like he looks to me like such a perfect man. And so his looks are just perfect for the role as
I'll
well.
Say.
And it's just been great to collaborate together again after so many years of not having that. So it's been great fun for us.
Jim and I were in something together. What was it? I wasn't very nice to you.
Oh, Valerie, I think you and I have worked together many times before, but I do recall the time that I was blindfolded tied to a chair and you had a gun to my head.
Yes. So,
too much to say. I think that
That's
was a
right,
whole
too much to say. Yeah. Tennis, I'd like you to comment about the involvement with youth, which is of such an important aspect of theater today.
Absolutely. So this year, I really wanted to focus on expanding the company and reaching out to younger folks to join the project. Sometimes we don't have that kind of access to a younger generation. So you have to really work hard to find those connections and those avenues to meet them. So I basically, you know, put out a lot of like press releases saying we're starting an internship program. I got a little bit of funding from the Wayne County Community Foundation to do that. I was invited to come to different schools in Wayne County and eventually, you know, made some pitches, did some recruiting, and found a great group of six teenagers and college age students, ages 14 to 25. And I'm just having the most lovely time working with them. And I know that they're enjoying themselves, again, to find themselves in a creative process and to be asked what they want to say. And so they've created a scavenger hunt station, and then a good many of them are in the chorus as well. And, yeah, I mean, young blood, you know, fresh energy. I mean, it's just so important if you have an ensemble and if you are building community work that you have every generation represented. And I think we pretty much do now in this in this performance.
And before we have to end, can you just briefly give us a sneak preview of what the scavenger hunt is?
Oh, yes. So Adam is going to lead one group of scavenger hunters, and Eve is going to lead another group. And we're going to go out to the farm, and there's, in the first week, 7 stations, and in the second week, 9 stations. And we're going to visit each station, and we each are going to have a big scavenger hunt checklist on a huge, you know, a huge like pad. That's what we're going to, we decided that, Jim, while you were away, just telling you right now. And we're going to go to all these different stations, and these stations include a chef who's doing speculative fiction about what's going to be growing on the farm in 2040, the Lenape clan mother from Lenape Nation of Pennsylvania, who's going to be teaching a Lenape lesson and talking about what she's lost as far as language and how she's refinding it and teaching it. We're going to walk along a fence line where all of the words that are currently being
banned,
or at least not, there's a word for it on the federal government website where they're suggesting it they not be used. There's 120 words that are being like not used and not wanting to be circulated by the government, and they're going to be posted on a fence line along the farm, and people get to read them all and then make up sentences after as part of the scavenger hunt checklist. There's going to be a disco dance party in a pine grove. So it's a lot of different fun things that the audience is going to get to do with either Adam or Eve, and they get to go to all the different stations.
It does sound like a lot of fun, and you get to be out on your beautiful farm.
Yeah.
And also part of it will be indoors in your beautiful theater setting.
Act one is indoors. Act two is outdoors. Act three, we come back in to the patio area.
Well, thank you both for taking time to come in. And is there anything you would like to add?
Well, I hope people can get tickets at farmartscollective.org. There's going to be 50 to 60 seats per show, so I urge folks to get their tickets soon so they can get a seat if they want to see this play, because it can sell out.
And what are the dates?
The opening is July 24th, and the show runs until August 3rd, Thursday through Sunday at 6:30 p.m.
And all of that information is at?
farmartscollective.org.
Okay, well, thank you, Adam and Eve, and I'll see you in paradise.
Yes.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi for that. That's about it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Reminder, Congress defunded us, but we're not defeated. We do need your financial support to keep our vital public service going in the community. Stand with us. Go to WJFFradio.org. Donate now to keep us going strong as we weather this financial storm. But we're going to make it with your help. Listener-supported public radio. It's Radio Catskill. And this has been Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This week on This American Life, Josh visits the mean girl he knew in elementary school, and she's still mean.
They look right at you and say, I know you're garbage. You know you're garbage. Why pretend? And you're going to come over to my house, which is the biggest house I've ever seen in my life. And you're going to say, you see this garbage? This is what a real man provides for me.
Some people never get over it. The allure of the mean friend.
You know, you come here and you tape me for your stupid friend's radio show, and then you get the hell out.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
This is WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, the temperature a little cooler than yesterday, high of 73, but sunshine and clouds mixed. Clouds tonight, a low of 54. A little warmer tomorrow, intervals of clouds and sunshine as well. Currently 73 at our Liberty Studios. On Point is coming up next from WBUR in Boston. It's 11 o'clock.